You're not saying I'm going to pick a side and put on a team jersey. You're saying talk to me. Let me hear what you got to say, because they're the reasons why these elections have changed place. Sure, they're the reasons why we're here right now. And then you're choosing to do this now after Charlie Kirk was doing it for 16 years or however many years, because he knew that the people, the young folks, were going to be the future. And that's why you're here trying to imitate the exact same thing.
First of all, I'm not
trying.
I would never be so low that I would imitate such a loser like Charlie Kirk. Number one, okay. Number two, okay. I've been doing these events for
Charlie Kirk had the balls to talk against Israel.
So I have the balls to talk about it. What do you mean? I was in Israel, in the West Bank. I've been probably to Israel and Palestine.
Yeah, go to Gaza.
I've been there. Yes.
I think when a part of the military gets sent out, when the police department in its own city are being told or just refusing to do anything of...
But that wasn't happening in D.C. or L.A., right?
Not that I know of.
It wasn't. When you signed up, were you in the National Guard or whatever? Did you sign up to go, you're going to go to Kansas City and arrest people, Americans that are smoking marijuana or something? Like, is that like in your job description? Is that like a thing you guys train for as law enforcement of U.S. citizens? That just seems like a really bizarre, horrible way to use the military.
Now, a little background on myself. I spent my whole life being an activist and fighting for criminal justice reform. You know, I fought for voices that were unheard and families that didn't think that they had a voice. I fought to end solitary confinement in New York. I fought to limit qualified immunity. I fought so that inmates could have at their own convenience the ability to call their families and children at home. I choose to look at redemption and second chances. And one of the things that made me distance myself from the Democratic Party fully is that I sat there and fought for these people. I saw it as rehabilitation and second chances. I saw a different side of people that society chose to see. And when I looked at the Democratic Party campaigning, the biggest thing that they focused on, instead of actually policies, which that would have been enough to win the election, but instead they focused on criminal conviction, and he's a felon, and he's a felon, and he's a felon. And that resonated with me, because now I'm sitting here dedicated my time to defending these people and changing their visual in society and giving them a second chance. And that rhetoric tore all that down. It replaced that stigma on these people who have done their time back in society and trying to rebuild their thing. How do you feel about that?
I can understand where you're coming from, but I feel like from a perspective of somebody who might have been a felon or might have served time, I feel like that rhetoric is probably some of the most important, because the big deal with Trump wasn't that he was a felon, it's that he avoided all the responsibility, all the culpability, all the accountability of the crimes that he committed. I feel like the big issue with Trump, and the reason why people kind of like fixate on this, is because people like to pretend that he did nothing wrong, which I think is kind of like the worst thing you can do for somebody that needs to reform their behavior or needs to change, you know, like the course their life is on. And I think kind of inarguably, when we look at the Trump second term, like the lack of accountability is incredibly obvious, because he hasn't admitted to any faults or any mistakes, and he is barreling down the same pathway, you know, 10 times the speed.
So prior to Trump, should a convicted felon have been president? Could have convicted felon have been president?
I believe so, yeah, right?
They can't vote, but I'm saying in your opinion, because that rhetoric says that this person, that's all I heard.
Oh, for the
convicted
for
felon
the...
shouldn't be president. A convicted felon. And in my mind, nobody should be judged by the worst days of their lives. 1,000%. And our criminal justice is far from perfect. And there's a lot of people who are wrongfully convicted because of that flawed system. So I don't look at anybody. In my mind, somebody's guilty when they're actually proven to it, not because the system says it. And honestly, I trust my life my entire life to convicted felons more than I would some regular non-criminal folks. So that's where that rhetoric came in. And the second issue that I want
sure,
to talk
I just
about.
To speak on that first thing. I like, if you're a convicted felon, you should be able to run for president or do whatever else. Like, I'm a big believer that if you've served your time or done, if you've gone through the process, you've gone through the system, then you're through the system, right? Like, I don't know what else, you know, people. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you insofar as that's it. But again, I would say that there's like two things going on. It's a little too loud because it's going to, I can hear the feedback a little on the speaker.
Or whoever's telling it.
Okay. The issue that you run into is for Trump is the fact that since he didn't serve any time and there was no accountability, that's one of the reasons why the Democrats went in so hard on them. But then the second issue is that the Republicans are the ones generally that talk the big, you know, no criminals, no felons. We need to deport everybody. We need to put people in prison. And because of that, I think that's another reason why the rhetoric was thrown at Donald Trump. I think when you look at the two parties, I think it's pretty clear which one is a bit more vindictive when it comes to, you know, like criminal conviction related stuff. It's the same. Wait, once it gets turned down, don't turn it back up. Okay. Work on the speaker. Okay. I hear it over here. It's driving me crazy. Sorry. Okay, let me reset. I think it's similar to when sometimes when there are Republican candidates that get outed for like gay scandals or whatever, I think when people on the left make fun of them, it's not because they become anti-gay, but it's just a little bit hypocritical, because in every other circumstance, like conservatives are so big on punishing crime and punishing people as much as they can. I'm sure you, I don't know what your particular stance is on guns, but if you've ever filled out like a 4473, you have to fill out that question of like, are you an unlawful user of narcotics, including cannabis, marijuana? And they got Hunter Biden on like the, he had a gun, but he also did drugs at the same time. And for a group of people that are ordinarily so pro-gun and so anti-ATF, it was crazy to see all of them cheering and clapping for that Hunter Biden conviction.
Well,
so yeah,
that's what the parties are. It's a bunch of hypocrisy. Like, for example, the last gentleman or the first gentleman talked about Palestine. Now, I would counter that argument and storytell. And do you think that Native Americans and indigenous people have the right to exist?
Well, to exist, of course.
Okay, so then why aren't you parading and celebrating and having the fight for their land back? Why am I standing in Mexico right now?
Yeah,
same logic.
I'm not going to disagree there. I think that gets hairy. But I would say that the hypocrisy on the conservative side is around almost every single issue right now. I would say that the hypocrisy on the left tends to be with kind of like the more activist crowd, but like the legislative crowd or the legal crowd or the elected people, I think it's very different worlds there.
But I give the conservatives and the red the credit because they at least take stances.
Well, but they change them constantly.
Yeah, but so do the Democrats.
I don't agree.
I absolutely agree. The fact that you can give an ambiguous answer and you can't, the fact that you mentioned October 7th like 40 times.
Yeah.
But what about October 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, and every day up until this point? What about every day before? The fact that since that time you could only mention one day. And your excuse is, oh, the numbers. You can't even let journalists in there to get the right numbers. That's number one. And your excuse is because of the numbers. So basically, since they suck at genocide, they can't be genocidal. That's basically what that logic came to.
No, I think they could do a genocide pretty good if they wanted to. We can talk about other dates if you want. I mean, October 7th is one that came up, but...
Social media is the only reason why the Palestinian people have any kind of dignity and any life left. Because if that media blackout was not broken through independent sources... there would have been a full-fledged flattening of Gaza. And the fact that you can't even take a stance to make that full-fledged answer of it, that was the problem with the last election, is that they couldn't take one single stance to say, hey, you know what, why? Because money talks.
Sure.
And I'm sorry, but you cannot put a value on somebody's life.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. You're just completely wrong, though. There wasn't widespread media in 48 when the Nakba happened. There were still 100,000, but there were still 100,000 Palestinian
Arabs. And that's why the borders changed.
In Israel, they didn't all get stomped then, so that didn't happen then. There wasn't widespread media coverage in 67 when they took the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and expanded into the Golan Heights. There are still Palestinians left there that weren't completely genocided without widespread media coverage. You had the whole first Intifada. You had the second Intifada. They were still there afterwards. So, I mean, I love Americans. You can come up and scream and get all hungry or whatever. But the reality is, if you don't have like a solution for the problem, you don't have an actual way to fix things, like you can get here and get indignant about it, but it's not going to get anybody anywhere. And that's all.
The great solution?
Yeah.
Let them figure it out. Why am I paying for it? Because you know what? When you start funding it or stop funding it, then a conversation's going to start.
Then the conversation's going to end because then they're just going to kill them all.
Oh, okay.
They'll go turkey on it. They'll say, oh, well, we're not getting funding. We don't have any commitment to the West
anymore. Speculation, but the fact that you could justify.
What's insane about that?
What's insane about it is that the world...
A country to the north of them, it killed 500,000 Arabs. It happened in Syria. We saw 60,000 children starved to death in Yemen, right, over, you know, the past, like, 10 years. You've seen how many people die in
Congo,
Sudan.
And Sudan.
You've seen
and
how many
Tigray,
people... No, I'm not even going all the way, you know, we don't have to go that farther in Africa. I'm just saying that the region is a very violent region.
How much
so
of that are
that
we paying for?
How much of that... I mean,
how much of that are we paying for?
Is that the only issue that you have with it?
No, it's not the only issue, but I have a problem.
Let's say that we stop supporting Israel monetarily. Are you like, oh, okay, well, if they want to genocide them, at least we're not paying for it. Now you're cool with it? Like,
I'm not cool with it, but you know what? That is a leverage point. The same gentleman, I'm glad he brought the point up, why release the hostages? Because Israel's bombing the shit out of them, killing their own hostages, bombing the shit out of them beforehand. That was their only leverage point, and you wanted them
leverage?
To give out...
What was, what was the leverage?
Human bodies.
No. What did they get for the leverage? You said they still got bombed.
Still got bombed. The whole ceasefire deal was to at least hold on to that little bit of leverage. And then they turned them and they're still getting bombed now.
The reason why they held on to them is because they wanted the fighting to continue.
Of course.
What else did they get? The fighting continued, didn't it?
It is going to continue because nothing's being done about it because there's no penalty. There's no repercussion. We've collected. The world doesn't agree on not a single thing in this world. Ever. And that's one thing that they can agree on is that it's the genocide and war crimes are being committed. That is the world against us. That has never happened in my history of my life. And you are saying, oh, they're not credible. They can say whatever they want.
I'm not.
How does that make sense?
the quibbling is over the specific term of genocide. If you want to say that war crimes have happened, I absolutely agree with that.
And your defense to why genocide is not a genocide is because the numbers aren't there.
No, it's not.
So because they suck at genocide, it's because...
It's, you don't care about any of the dead people. You understand that, right?
I don't.
If you want to sit up here and you want to obsess over the use of one term, and then you want to go back to the status quo, which, by the way, that's what Netanyahu wants anyway. That favors Israel. The status quo is good for them. If you just want to obsess over the word, like, fine, the whole world can say it's a genocide. How far have they gotten? How much is the declaration of genocide
from
the 57th Independent UN Commission?
So,
how much closer? No, no, tell me. How much closer has it gotten them to an actual peaceful agreement? We're at the 20-point plan, which is Netanyahu's wet dream. How much of the genocide accusations help?
Are you finished?
I want you to tell me how much the genocide accusations have helped.
I'm going to tell you how it helps.
Okay.
Of those killed, how many were Hamas and how many were women and children?
I didn't hear an answer to my question.
How many were children?
I want you to tell me how much has the genocide accusations helped? How much closer are we now than we were to October 6th?
It has helped a lot because when that word started being brought out, more investigations started happening. And people started doing it, and organizations that are not affiliated with either side started putting their foot forward and saying, hey, let's see if this is actually true. These numbers haven't moved up at the scale that they were moving up at a point. Let's see why that is. Where are our journalists? Why aren't our organizations that are unaffiliated not being allowed in? Why is aid not being there? Why are people starving? All of that happened because we started using those trickery words. So because we started using the words is the reason why they started actioning happening.
Gotcha. So nothing has happened. Nothing will happen, right?
In the future of it, the strategy, if I wanted to genocide a people, what I would do is stop the reproduction. So I would kill the women and children, which are the next generation in lineup, and hopefully stop going down from there. You know where they did that? The United States did that to Puerto Rico when they tried to sterilize the women in Puerto Rico to control the population. Bet you don't speak about that. Did you know the United States?
I bet there's a lot of things that I don't know.
I used to
the largest revision in death in the Gaza Strip was the revising down the number of women and children killed because they realized that those numbers initially were there was a huge discrepancy between the Gaza Health Ministry and
reported
the
by who?
Reported by Hamas and reported by the Gaza Ministry of Health. But I'm just saying that like at the
where
end
do
of the
Hamas leaders live?
Well, right now I don't even know how many are left alive.
Where do they live? Do you think they live in Gaza?
Well, they were getting killed in Qatar and in Syria.
Oh, so they're not.
A lot of them weren't. No,
Gaza.
Correct.
Okay.
I think
so. Just
was
like when we target
in
the cartels in other countries, the cartels, a lot of those real actual cartel leaders live here. So you can kill the pawns of Hamas all you want, and all you're doing
is
creating
the leadership
perpetual.
Of Hamas as well, right?
One guy, and if
no,
that's if we even know that that's the guy,
way more than one guy, and we do know they killed a lot of Hamas leadership.
Gotcha.
My issue with this is that, okay, because every time I debate, you know, people that are on your side, I understand the pro-Palestinian side, is people assume that I'm this crazy Zionist. The Netanyahu's behavior has been insane. I think that the amount of death has been crazy. I think that there are, like, clear examples.
And he gets praised here like a hero.
Yeah, because boomers love fucking Israel because they're boomers and they're retarded. I mean, I agree with you. It's crazy. It's horrible. But, like, when the fixation just becomes, like, as long as we declare it a genocide, like, we're good. It's like, it hasn't gotten us anywhere. We haven't gotten anywhere. All the terms, all the apartheid, all the genocides. B'Tselem is, like, the organization in Israel that's
keeping
track of the Palestinian
issue. Nothing
has
gotten us anywhere.
I agree, but what has to happen is, like, a real thing needs to happen. So, like, right now, Trump is a total Israeli sycophant. So the U.S. won't do anything because Trump just wants to move on from it.
We spent 2 years under Biden under Biden of it.
True, but I mean, like, Biden at least had a little bit more restraint on the Israeli side than Trump does on Netanyahu. You think that
he sent a shit ton of money for that to happen.
Yeah, but do you think that Trump and do you think that Biden gave the same length of leash to Netanyahu?
Two birds of the same feather. That's what I think.
So the political party that arranged the JCPOA,
here's the thing: you're not going to convince me. Party rhetoric. I'm people over party all day, every time.
People,
I don't listen.
Talk about parties are the government that run our foreign policy.
Yeah,
the
unfortunately, that's the creation
that
Xiao did, and that's the reason why
government.
We have Noah's. No, absolutely not. Parties are the destruction of this country.
It doesn't make it. It's like saying I like white blood cells more than the immune system for fighting diseases. It doesn't make any sense. You have to have the whole apparatus. A bunch of people are going to pick up rifles and go to Gaza and fight off the IDF. Like you have to work through the establishment system. That right.
Well, I'm glad you're not leading our military strategy for damn sure.
How many wars have ended because a person took, like, what are you talking about?
First off, the fact that we are having these barbaric wars in modern day times is ridiculous. The fact that it's costing us this much, the reason why I bring up the cost so much is because, do you know how much it costs to fix homelessness here in America?
No, it's
estimated about $20 billion a year.
There's no way that's true.
There's no way?
I don't think so.
There's no way.
I don't think so.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess you're right, because if you think about it, if only you can kill off half of Gaza with... What, $100 billion? There's enough to kill all the people. I guess you can't feed them.
Well, I mean, if you were actually indiscriminate bombing, you'd probably do it for a lot cheaper. But how many? What is the estimated number of homeless people in America? Do you know? I'm not trying to quiz you.
I don't know the exact number, but I know 18% of that number is veterans.
Okay. Do you know the number, Brian? You should know this. Number of homeless, total homeless people in America. Who knows it? I'm going to make a guess that it's in excess of 1 million people.
Too many.
Well, I guess it's in excess of 1 million people.
Too many.
So when somebody says like $20 billion would fix it, what would that be, like $20,000 a year per person? Like, and it's probably, the number's probably greater than that. Like, I think homelessness is an issue that requires money and like political will, but because everybody views homeless people as either political props or subhuman, I just don't think there's like the will in America to get anything done. And because, you know, Republicans won't talk about it because they all moved
but
to the West
Coast. But that's where it comes to political party polarization, like I mentioned. The parties are the ones creating the divide.
Yeah, but
for example, who has run Chicago for the longest time is Democrats. So the Republicans use Chicago, which is one of my favorite cities here in this country, as such a negative crime-ridden country. And I've walked the streets of Chicago. I've been on the south side where they say is the worst parts. And it's kind of sketch sometimes, but that's everywhere you go.
Yeah, I agree.
But the fact that they have, in the time that they've run Chicago this whole entire time, haven't said, hey, let's work on Chicago and put the resources where we really need to be so that they can stop using that as a talking point, that's where I have a problem. But because the divided polarization keeps us apart, that's the reason why parties suck.
Okay, I'm curious. Let's say that we want to fix homelessness next year, and you could give one party all the power, the Supreme Court, Congress, and the president. Do you think that the Republicans and the Democrats would have the same capacity to fix that problem, to take the same approach?
Neither of them, though. It's not beneficial for them.
So you had to pick one. You think it's the same. You think it's a wash either way.
I don't think I should pick either one. 56% of all registered voters right now are independent voters. People are leaving their parties in droves. That number before the 2024 election was only about 54, 53.
Are you thinking about people that haven't voted or?
No, I'm talking about registered voters right now are 56 to 57% independent registered.
That sounds way too high.
No, that's not true.
That is absolutely true. Check it out.
NV1 is 39%.
Yeah. Nevada won. Nevada is a purple, whatever color you want
to
put it.
Is that just in states that don't require you to like be registered
that
to party to vote in the primary?
National voter registry.
Okay, regardless.
The reason why is because of every one of you young folks out here. Because y'all are at least doing the due diligence
do you think,
to sit there and register like you want. You're not saying I'm going to pick a side and put on a team jersey. You're saying talk to me. Let me hear what you got to say. Because they're the reasons why these elections have changed ways.
Sure,
they're the reasons why we're here right
day.
Now. And then you're choosing to do this now after Charlie Kirk was doing it for 16 years or however many years because he knew that the people, the young folks were going to be the future. And that's why you're here trying to imitate the exact same thing.
I would never be so low that I would imitate such a loser like Charlie Kirk. Number one, okay. Number two, okay. I've been doing these events for
Charlie Kirk had the balls to talk against Israel.
So I have the balls to talk about it. What do you mean? I was in Israel, in the West Bank. I've been probably to Israel and
go to Gaza.
I've been there. Yes, to the West Bank. That's Gaza.
That's not Gaza, homie. That's
Palestine. I can't go to Gaza while it's being bombed. But I've been to the West Bank. Okay, I've had a Palestinian tour guide. I've been there. I've done the homework. I know more about it than you, and more about it than Charlie definitely.
You do.
I promise you.
You do.
Okay. Number one. Number two. All right.
You want to hear my you want to hear my credentials on Gaza?
At the end of the day, you have to work through some apparatus. When you come out, you just say, oh, both sides are the same. Oh, who matters? It doesn't matter who you vote for. Oh, let's all be independent. Nothing's going to get done.
I'm going to tell you my credentials on Gaza.
Okay.
So after October 7th, I was running for office. And someone very close to me reached out and said, hey, I have a family, an American family in Gaza stuck. Beginning, before all the heavy, heavy, harsh bombing started. And I said, why can't they come out? They said, they're not letting anybody out. I said, but they're American. They said, they don't care. Their passports lapsed because of the delay, and they weren't allowed in Jerusalem to get their passports reinstated. Do you know, I took that job on. It's a family of five. I contacted every single Democratic congressman that I had contact to. One, they didn't care because they were Utah residents. So they're like, contact that representative. I'm like, I'm contacting you. You sit next to that person. Talk to them. No one wanted to help. The one person that actually did help me, surprisingly, I won't say his name, but is a Republican hella Zionist on TV. But I at least sat down with him. He said, you know what? I don't care where they're from or who they are. I agree with you that they are Americans. Let me get their passports expedited. Let me see what we can do. And we did it. We got it there. We got it done. We sent them to Egypt and they got them through Cairo and we got them out of Gaza, that family of five. Where were the Democrats then?
How old were the people in this family?
One, the youngest was 10, turned 11 as soon as he got back here.
How did they get into their passports were close to expiring? Normally, if it's within 6 months, they won't even let you in another country.
They moved there. They had initially moved there for the grandfather's business.
To live in Gaza?
To live in Gaza. That's where they were.
Okay.
And then all of this stuff happened. They tried to renew their passports. They were not getting allowed in. We did that. A Republican Zionist congressman helped me get that done.
So are all Republicans good now?
I don't know. No, but I'm just saying that story. That's like what happens. That's the result when you take party out of it. When you talk to somebody result. As a person, as part of, instead of their party affiliation, and
this
start
is
grouping
great
everybody
for the
together.
Five people that you helped, but what does this have? This doesn't get us anywhere.
Well, imagine if I can help five people. Imagine if you sat there, took a side, said, "Hey, let me help another five people." I used to be anti-gun. Until I started getting, informed of my own history. Used to be hella anti-gun. And I used to think, hey, the military, we're not going to overthrow the military. They have all this arsenal of everything going on. And then I got to travel and campaign all across this wonderful country. I met people of all different ages, genders, and races. And I was in Alabama with one of my great friends. And he sat there and he said he loves his gun. He has every fucking possible arsenal of gun you can have. And I said, why do you like it? And he said, well, because I'm going to defend my rights. And I said, but I said the same thing. Your military, well, they're never going to turn. I used to think that. They're never going to turn the military against us. And what are you going to do? And he said, I'll tell you what I can do. I'm probably going to die, but I'm going to take out five people. And if I could take out five people, numbers are coincidental, someone else can take out. If someone take out, the people overpower it. And I used to think that the United States would never turn their army until I found out in 1950 when Puerto Ricans like myself were trying to fight for independence and the United States bombed Puerto Rico. U.S. citizens. That magically gets erased from history. So there you go.
Okay.
We gotta go.
All right, okay.
Do you believe the right-wing party or conservatives in general are more violent than the left-wing and liberals?
What do you mean by violent?
Politically or just having... wanting to commit any act that doesn't, like, if they don't get what they want or policies are enacted that they don't agree with, that they go out in the country and commit violence, whether they initially don't mean to start to or they still end it with violence, regardless of the option.
I feel like, yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I think there's also, this question comes up a lot. I think there's something to be said for like status quo stuff too, and how, this is a very wokey take, but how like systems, do violence. So like for instance, in the time of like slavery, right? When slave owning is legal and then you've got some, like your Nat Turner slave rebellions and stuff, right? In these systems, it's always the enslaved people who are way more violent than the status quo people because they're doing what's legal, which is owning slaves, right? But like that analysis is very unsatisfactory because, like, well, of course, the people who are enslaved are going to be more violent. They're fucking slaves. Like, what the fuck? And of course, the people who have the slaves aren't going to be as violent because their violence is legalized, you know? Modern day comparison is I would look at something like the right to have an abortion. When you look at conservatives and the fact that they have, like, clawed back abortion in however many states they have now, effectively making it illegal, like if it's a six-week, limitation, that's effectively, I would say, basically illegal abortion. when you look at that, I think if you're a woman, I think if you're pregnant, that would feel like violence to me, that I'm like, oh, shit, I'm, like, locked into this thing now, and if I don't have the money to leave the state, and I don't know if I leave the state and get caught, I might get in trouble. That feels like kind of a little, I would say that's a form of violence, right? So if there was one violent protester right in response to a really restrictive abortion law, then the analysis would be, oh, well, look, the left is more violent here because you don't see the right wing killing abortion doctors, even though they have, right? But I'm saying hypothetically, But I'm saying, like, that analysis feels a little crude, or it feels like it leaves something to be desired because, like, well, sure, but, like, if the status quo policy is kind of supporting a kind of violence and then there's an uprising on the other side, is it really just the other side that's violent? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. All that said, I feel like the right wing is more violent in general. I think you could justify it even just, like, on a raw level. But yeah, that's my feeling on that. Okay.
I think with my own personal experiences, obviously there could be different statistical stats for countrywide, what everyone else goes through. I disagree. I think the left side is more fundamentally violent with things that they don't agree with, and they're very confrontational.
What's like an example of that? Because like my counterexample is going to be the immigration stuff recently, ICE. So like, what's the left wing equivalent to that in the United States?
For conservatives being violent in the country?
Well, so I would say that like ICE is a great example right now, especially of like conservatives just being over the top. And like, what's the left wing version of that, or the equivalent, I guess, that you feel where you're like, oh, wow, okay, well, sure, maybe ICE is in masks and they're, doing crazy shit right now, but the left does this. Like, what's in your mind?
My only comparison for large scale would be the Summer of Love. I served in the military for 8 years. I was stationed in Portland for 6 of those years, Miami in 2 years. I lived 2 blocks away from all of the BLM riots to the point where you needed to get permission from command to be able to go in that area, and I lived in that area, so it was a whole special thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've been pretty conservative since 15. I'm 28 now, and...
But outside of the BLM riots, is there anything else, or is that... That's a strong pivot point for you, and that's going to be forever.
I think any violent action of, like, when people turned on Elon Musk, the left side turned on Elon Musk with Tesla, Tesla factories.
What was that in response to, though? So that's a really great example, I would say, of, like, a kind of status quo violence, right? So arguably, the USA cut of that program, which is probably going to lead to over 10 million people, 14 million, I think is the last number I saw people dead, right? And Elon Musk basically led the charge on that, however much he could with his ketamine-addled brain. But when you look at that happening, and then you see people set fire to Teslas in response, I don't know how many that ultimately happened. That is violence, I would definitely agree. But then it's in response to that cut. But I feel like nobody ever sees anything happening on the conservative side, and then they just see like the response on the liberal side, and then it's like, okay, well, they're more violent. Does that factor in at all, or do you consider that at all? Or
I think like I can be very reasonable. I can understand both sides with almost anything, even with like abortion rights. I can understand like women's rights of wanting to do that and respecting that and letting people live the way they want to live their lives.
How can you understand the side of cutting USAID, though, on the Elon Musk side? What's to be understood about that? It just seemed like a wholly aggressive, illegal, like... cruel.
I think there are plenty of organizations and programs that get a lot of money that the left side wants and the right side wants. I think both of them are going to affect a large group of people, no matter what it is, whether it's Elon Musk and him affecting that with USAID and cutting all the finances with a lot of government spending. I don't think it's going to be a win-win for either side. I think people will cherry pick very large events that happen and carry on to that. We can go back to this, like USAID and everything, or USAID. Like even majority of like my living in the Portland area during 2018 to 2023, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I had to be very quiet about my beliefs and everything because I've had friends and family members that live also in the area where they would be kind of excommunicated from work or losing friendships and all this stuff to the point where it also get violent if you were very vocal about having any conservative rights. Obviously,
sure.
Portland is a very niche city with
its
views.
Do you think that you said you were in the military, though, right?
Yes, I was.
Remember, don't ask, don't tell?
I do.
Isn't that kind of a similar feeling where you have to remain kind of hidden about a certain belief, and if you say anything, you're going to be kicked out of literally your job?
Yeah, I can understand both sides with that as well.
Both sides of that? Of
like the military and their ideology of how they view people that way and them wanting to get rid of them if they were vocal about it. Even like what today's policies of Trump trying to remove transgenders from the military. I can understand both sides of...
Well, I don't think that's true. I don't think... Because if you say you understand both sides equally, you're saying one side, one thing moved you more to another direction. So it seems like you have more understanding for one side than the other, no?
I can have understanding for one side more than the other and still not agree with everything that the right does or the left does. I can have some policies that are left that I lean with, mm-hmm. some that are right.
Well, sure.
Can,
so like in 2024, were you a Trump? Did you vote for Trump? The last
I haven't voted at all.
Okay. Would you vote for Trump, or do you think Trump was a better choice than Kamala, I guess?
Yes.
Do you still feel that way?
Yes.
With respect to, like, what thing, I guess?
I agree with his toughness on crime. I agree with the immigration policies.
So for toughness on crime, that's a good one, I think. Are you still in the military, or are you out?
I'm out.
Okay. Don't you think it's kind of fucking insane that he's deploying the military to cities for quote-unquote law enforcement? Isn't that like kind of the craziest thing you could... Isn't that like literally, not to do like a purpose of the Second Amendment Trump quote, which is things that he said, but like isn't that like one of the worst things the federal government could arguably do is deploy its military against its own citizens and then falsely claim that it fixed all the crime afterwards, like he said in D.C. and in L.A., kind of?
I think when a part of the military gets sent out, when the police department in its own city are being told or just refusing to do anything of...
But that wasn't happening in D.C. or L.A., right?
Not that I know of.
It wasn't, right?
Okay.
So, like,
when you signed up, were you in the National Guard or whatever, or the
active duty Coast Guard?
Active duty Coast Guard. Sorry, yeah. I mean, like, when you signed up for that, did you sign up to go, like, if they would have said, like, you're going to go to Kansas City and arrest people, Americans that are smoking marijuana or something? Like, is that, like, in your job description? Is that, like, a thing you guys train for as law enforcement of U.S. citizens? That just seems like a really bizarre, horrible way to use the military, right? Because the military is used against enemies of the state, and when you're using them against your own population, you're saying that I need to deploy my military against my own citizens.
Well, my only argument with that is if Trump is classifying certain groups or people to be domestic terrorists in the country here, and it's supposed to be fighting domestic or foreign terrorism, whether Trump finally classified Antifa as a terrorist organization on domestic land. And I mean, I live in the Portland area and saw of that plenty.
Yeah, but we don't even have domestic terrorist designations, right? That's the thing that Trump just invented.
Okay.
And then what is Antifa? What does that even mean? Like, Trump says that all the Democrats are Antifa. Like, the Democrats have been accused for 10 years of using George Soros to fund Antifa rallies. And I don't even know where I don't get any of this funding. Like, where is this happening from?
I think blanket statements or blanket statements in general are very crude.
Okay, Trump lives in blanket statements, right?
And I don't agree with him, like, on those type of things. Like, okay. I don't think every Democrat or liberal or anything like that is Antifa. Or even if people are protesting, I don't think they're Antifa either. I think people have the right to peacefully protest.
Okay.
Can I just ask you one
thing?
Yeah,
no worries.
Sorry, I don't mean to get involved here, but would you say tough on crime is January 6th insurrectionists, calling them hostages and patriots, and pardoning 1,500 people, 700 of them violent criminals? Is that tough on crime?
Jeez.
He called them patriots.
The mic guy. Oh, chill. Oh, my God.
I have a very different view of January 6th. I do think there are bad people that obviously did bad things, and some of them should have been arrested, and I don't think all of them should have been pardoned, because I know some of them went off to commit more crimes after they were pardoned. I don't agree with that. I think criminals should stay in prison, and I know there's two very different views on January 6th and insurrectionists.
I guess it's crazy to me that, like, there's a very clear line that things have been said and then things happen as a result. Mm-hmm. And if it was on the Democratic side, people would be losing their mind. But on the Republican side, like, it's like the cleanest lines ever. So at an event similar to this, Charlie Kirk was assassinated by, my understanding is, basically a young Mormon guy. And everybody, or he was Mormon, he was raised Mormon at least. I saw a lot of conservatives on Twitter saying stuff like, if your church didn't talk about this, you need to leave your church. And there was a lot of weird kind of, like, feelings about, I guess, like, Mormonism bubbling up in places. And then a guy went and he drove to a Mormon church, the guy with the two flags in the back of his truck, and he went and he shut it up. And, like, nobody thinks to make any connection here at all. It's just, like, completely unspoken about. You have Donald Trump saying things like, come to the Capitol January 6th. We're going to protest. It'll be awesome. You know, they show up to protest the results of the election that Trump told them was stolen. They commit, I would say, an insurrection, at the very least a riot or acts of violence. They get convicted, go to jail, and they get pardoned by Trump, who has now pardoned every single person that's committed a crime to help him. How is this possibly the helping tough on crime guy when he's made every kind of crime acceptable as long as you're on his team? This is like the worst, most crooked crony criminal assisting president I've ever seen in my entire life. So I guess it's hard for me to understand. Yeah, sorry.
My only argument against that is, like, the second half of the video of Trump, obviously people are going to feel a certain way when he tells people to go protest. Obviously people can go protest peacefully even if it's outside of the Capitol. That's legally allowed. I think the second half of the video that was pretended to not exist or be aired on news, of him telling people to not be violent, to do this peacefully and not do things that they shouldn't be doing.
You know that never happened, right?
No, I've seen the video.
You haven't. I promise you.
Okay.
The only thing, in the hour speech that he made, he said, and I know you guys will be going down there and marching peacefully in the Capitol. He never said, don't do anything, don't be violent. That's all he said. And then the rest of the speech, like, I'm curious, in your mind, was it a coincidence that they all happened to go there and got violent and insurrected and delayed the electoral count? Was that, like, it just happened to happen then?
I think my only issue is with people, Trump claiming or other politicians claiming the request of the National Guard and Nancy Pelosi denying it, whether that was true or false.
Why would it matter, though? I think I love that. I'm sorry. It's hard for you because it's impossible to defend a position because that used to be the position. But now we've seen in D.C., Trump had no problem saying he wanted the National Guard to go there for bullshit reasons, right? For crime enforcement, I guess. And now he says he's cleaned up all the crime. He couldn't do that on January 6th. He needed Pelosi for that one.
That part I'm not sure about.
Well, because it's total. It's okay. Not. No, yeah. But you're good.
Okay, so I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So one of the themes of American history or political history is the increasing power of the executive, right? The executive branch in particular. When the founding fathers kind of founded the country, obviously it wasn't as complex. It wasn't even as big, right? You didn't have all these geographical areas. But as time passed on, right, you know, you have a movement from, what is it, like dual level federalism to marble cake federalism, right? And you basically have, you know, the incorporation of the, like, Bill of Rights, right, into states because of the 14th Amendment, right? So I know it's a lot of context, but I'm going to get to the point. Do you think that basically what's happening with the Trump administration is an inevitable conclusion of the expansion of executive power? Because it's been very rare that even if you look back, like, as far back as Nixon or even at Bill Clinton, it's been very rare that that Congress takes away more more political authority to the president than they actually give. So, like, you know, one of the things you can think of that they've taken away from the president is, like, I think the power of impoundment, right? Which is, you know, the ability to basically not be able to remove stuff from, like, like bills they don't want, like, to pay out, stuff like that. And then I think another one is something about, like, the Nixon ruling, I think it was about, like, immunity. I guess, sorry, I know it's, if I'm all over the place. Do you think that Trump basically is the inevitable conclusion of the expansion of this continued expansion of executive theory? Or do you think that, you know, let's say maybe he loses election, Kamala wins this, the next Republican president comes into power. Do you think that we would be seeing basically everything that we're seeing right now?
So I think that Trump is a different type of thing than just expansion of executive power. I think Trump literally fancies himself as, like, a dictator. So I think it's a bit different. When you talk about the expansion of federal power, I think we saw a big clawback, I would say, in federal power back to the judiciary in the form of, was it Loper? Was that the case that overturned Chevron? And when Chevron was gone, the Supreme Court basically said statutory interpretation is strictly now within the purview of the court. The federal government is not allowed to decide what you guys think a law from Congress is. We're the only ones that can do that now. So that was probably a bit of a clawback. A claw towards the Supreme Court and less necessarily from Congress. But at the end of the day, like, Congress, as you said, are the ones allotting a lot of the power to the president because they feel like the president needs the ability to act, you know, with vigor or whatever. I think that the issue with Trump is that Trump is not just acting, like, as a strong executive. Like, one, he fancies himself as, like, this unitary executive, so he can act through all things. So Donald Trump is literally giving orders directly to his attorney general, Pam Bondi, to arrest political opponents because they make him look bad, right? That's a unique thing. Yeah. That's not, like, a thing that was ever, like, oh, we should let the president do this. That was, like, Trump was like, I'm going to do this because I don't care about anything.
I mean, I'm not agreeing with Trump or anything. I mean, but there actually has been precedent for this in American history, right? You look at, for example, during the 1920s, right? I think during World War One and a little bit after World War One, right? You had basically Woodrow Wilson allow basically people, the Palmer raids and stuff like that. This was executive authority being used to curtail, you know, civil rights, right? Or you even have the expansion of power through Abraham Lincoln, right? During the Civil War, they shut down the press and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think it's interesting because I think that throughout American history, there have been times where the president has grabbed onto more power, and then there's times where they let go. And I guess
I do agree with that. But I would say that there are, when you're doing, like, legal analysis on stuff, there's this concept called stare decisis, where, you know, rulings that are made, there are certain reasons why we let some rulings stand.
Let the case stand, right?
Over time, yeah. And one of these elements or one of these things that we think about when we think about, like, good rulings are, like, rulings or decisions made in ordinary time, right? If somebody were to say, like, oh, like, I think that this is a good decision, we should follow it, and it was made, like, at the height of, like, you know, World War II or something. It's like, okay, well, hold on. That was an exceptional time. I'm sure there are times where, you know, there were criticisms of Abe Lincoln related to, you know, detaining people without charges, habeas corpus, and everything else. And there were criticisms of, like, too much censorship, internment camps, obviously.
Yeah.
And, like, these are definitely things that can be criticized, I think, fairly. But it's also important to note these were, like, responses to exceptional things. Donald Trump part of his response is he declared an emergency at the border with Canada because of fentanyl coming in. This is bullshit, okay? I think there's something to be said for, like, there were other commentators besides just me, okay? But I was one of them, and I cringe now. And, like, one of my biggest fears was Trump would come into office and do nothing and just take credit for everything Biden did.
I remember
like,
you said that,
yeah. I'm like, fuck this guy, you know? But, like, to come in and to do so much insane stuff in response to... like nothing was is really going on. It wasn't like any crazy stuff popping up. Like Trump just came in and started doing a bunch of crazy shit. I think that deserves a different type of analysis than, you know, than analyzing actions in the shadows of like a massive world war, a massive thing. You know, I think it's a bit different.
So I do have a follow up for that because yeah. I've watched your content for a very long time. And I think one of the things that you criticized liberals a lot for in the past was basically calling conservatives fascists, right? Calling, you know, like Donald yeah. Trump fascist, stuff like that. So kind of going back to like the context of the expansion of executive authority, right, throughout U.S. history. Do you think, because obviously there are some people who will, there's some people who interpret U.S. history building up to this, right? Like there are people who believe that the conservative movement that exists today, this was the like the building blocks for this type of ruler was kind of established around, I think, like the 60s. Obviously, then you have Reagan and you have people in Reagan's cabinet who really advocated for, I think, the unitary executive theory. But then you obviously had his vice president win, which was George W. H. Bush, kind of more of a moderate. Then you obviously have Clinton, and then eventually you have George Bush, who obviously he expanded the federal government through the establishment of DHS. And obviously, you know, there was all this covert stuff happening in terms of like people being tortured and people being disappeared, right, because of the war on terror. So I guess, do you think that this is the end result of all this politics, or do you think it's just simply Trump took advantage of the moment, realized that there were already these kind of predispositions, and then is that I'm going to go full in?
I think took advantage of the moment. Like when you talk about like the deformation of the Department of Homeland Security, like I understand the need and the idea that we had, because part of the issues, I think, with 9/11 was our intelligence agencies just weren't communicating well with each other. So organizing all of these under like a, you know, a coherent branch that would allow for information exchange easier, like that makes sense, right? And it's in response to a huge terrorist attack, right? Again, so I would view that as fundamentally different than the Trump stuff, where it just seems like George Bush at least was kind of trying to follow, I think, what he thought, you know, was legally allowed or permissible within the office, the purview of the presidency. Donald Trump has no care whatsoever. Like his idea is every single branch of government should bow to whatever he wants it to do, or it doesn't even need to bow. He'll just do it anyway. And I do think that's fundamentally different. I do agree that the Conservative Party, I would say especially, has been building in this direction. I don't feel like the Democratic Party has been. Like if you compare like the authoritarian actions of Biden and Obama and Clinton versus Trump, Trump is just on a whole other level of crazy stuff, I would say.
One more question. I'm sorry, because this is the question I really want to ask you, kind of building all towards this, right? So something that you said is something that you said in the past is that you don't think that political lobbying is that much of an issue in the United States. Like you don't believe that like political operatives have that much influence into what legislation.
Not as much as people say. Yeah.
As people say.
Yeah.
But then how do you kind of square that away with, for example, the current Trump administration, right? You know, you think of all the think tanks that funded, you know, Project 2025. You think of all the judges, for example, in the first Trump and the second Trump administration, right? All the judges who are selected by people like in the Federalist Society and stuff like that. Or even like with RFK, right? You have all these industry people from, you know, like supplement industries working in directly with his FDA. So how do you kind of square the way saying that, you know, lobbyists don't have control or they don't influence our politics or our, you know, or these agencies and their...
Because I think the Project 2025 thing was way less about like enriching certain capital owners with a lot of money and way more heavily ideologically bent towards reshaping and reforming America into some kind of new place that it want, that it sees itself as being, right? Because there are a lot of policies and stuff and things that have come out of this with result to the crazy tariffs, the crazy immigration crackdowns, the horrendous trade relations with other countries. They're like bad for capitalists, they're bad for business. You know, our poor military industrial complex can't make as many weapons for Ukraine as they would be, which you would imagine, right, if that's what they're doing. We've got all this weird competition now with China, and you know, selling processes over there is a lot harder. I just feel like if money was in control, we would see a lot different stuff. We see a lot of different things happening with regards to that. So I think the lobbyists can like influence things, especially in areas we don't talk much about. And I'm not going to say they have zero impact, but I think ideology is really important. And sometimes people don't look at ideology at all. I think some people are very ideologically driven. Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I want to go back to like about the topic of violence on the right and the left. We can all agree that political violence, no matter what side, is bad.
Well, we don't all agree on that. Apparently, conservatives don't think that their side commits any violence, and seems like they think it's exciting and fun and cool. But I would say, yeah, we should all be against political violence. Yeah.
So I want to just go back this just over this past year because of political violence. Okay. And I think a good way to start off is of the big profile political violence. How much was on the right and how much was on the left?
The big profile.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
So I guess the ones that does actually make more like, not say headlines, but like actually being reported and into the news itself.
I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah. I agree that there has been some right-wing violence, especially with like the two like lawmakers in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, at least over this past year, has been much more on from left-wing violence. And I just don't mean on the current Trump administration with Elon Musk and like and all that, but I'm talking about like people who just hold right-wing views or like views that are many us on the far left disagree with.
Can we what's like some examples of this, I guess?
In the early like the first few months, I don't know exactly, but I believe it was April, of course there was the pro-Palestinian who murdered the two people who worked at the Israeli consulate in Washington D.C.
Yep.
Coming from just a Holocaust memorial event. Event. And of course his main objective, because he was pro-Palestine, as much video shown. Mm-hmm. And of course in May, and when in Colorado there was a fire, like another pro-Palestinian threw a Molotov of cocktails and a Run for Our Lives event, which was just for bringing back the hostages from Gaza. And of course there's a big profile one, of course the Charlie Kirk assassination, but also
to be fair, I still don't think we know if that guy was like a radical leftist, but I know that's controversial. But
you can definitely say the reaction on social media by a lot of the people on the left, uh-huh, who are like cheering it on or saying that Charlie Kirk deserved it and wish a misfortune upon his family.
Sure.
So
here is something that I think is interesting that I wish people would consider a little bit. Maybe I've missed these, but I haven't seen any radical like attack from the left happen where, after people see that this guy killed somebody and they go through his social media and they were like, oh my God, this guy's a radical leftist. I can tell he was at a Joe Biden rally. Or, oh my God, this radical leftist had like a I'm riding with Kamala Harris sticker on his car. It's always like the very far left, like kind of fringe radical crowd. Would you agree with that?
Partially.
Okay. On the right, I feel like it's bog standard MAGA stuff. It'll be stuff that I see on my mom's, like if my mom were to, like if somebody were to go out and commit a terrorist attack and you were showing my mom's Facebook page, they'd be like, oh yeah, that's definitely a radical, crazy person. And I feel like it's ordinary.
Yeah. So I think also a main difference is that, for example, when it came to the Minnesota lawmakers who were murdered and assassinated, mm-hmm, there was universal condemnation on both sides.
Absolutely not.
Yes, there were.
There was condemnation on the right initially because they thought the shooter was left wing, because they found that like the No Kings posters or whatever, and because Melissa Hortman had a vote that had to do with I think it was abortion or something to do with illegal immigrants, and in the first 8 hours the assumption was that the shooter was left wing and there was condemnation. After that happened, the entire right wing stopped talking about it, stopped caring about it, so much so that when I think Caitlin Collins asked Trump, it was either her or somebody else asked Trump in the Oval Office, when he was flying the flag at half mast for Charlie, and they were like, do you think that you should have given more attention to the Minnesota people that were killed? And he was like, Minnesota who? Minnesota what? He had nothing to say about it. When he was asked outside Air Force One, would you call Tim Walz to talk to him about the, you know, the murder of Melissa Hortman and her husband and then the other shooting of the two lawmakers? And he was like, no, that guy's whacked out, he said. So I totally disagree that there was a universal condemnation on the right. The right never condemns violence when they think it has anything to do with their side. I haven't seen it in the mainstream at all. I wish I was wrong on that, if you have examples. But I challenge you to look into that. The statements that I gave, I know Trump made, I do agree there was condemnation in the beginning, but it's because they saw those No Kings rally posters and they initially thought that he had targeted her for some like anti-abortion or pro-choice or pro-life vote or whatever. They're like, oh, it's a left-wing shooter. And then they stopped talking about it.
Okay. I guess I'll just say, like, and also, like, because I would say besides also, of course, the January 6th, because I would say it is an important event, but again, at the same time, it was over 4 years ago at this point. But I mean, a more relevant thing that happened on America was, of course, the spring of 2024 when all the pro-Palestinian movements happened on university campuses.
Yep.
And while, like, people can talk about, like, whether or not they had the free...
The difference, where, how many of those people were their speakers getting up and being like, we want to start off by saying, thank you, Joe Biden, and we love Kamala Harris? They all fucking hate the Democrats, right? Yep. But when it comes to January 6th, why were those people there? Because Trump called them to be there. Do you see the difference? Mm-hmm. The frustrating part of fighting. Like, I hate most of these people. I don't want to say I hate them. But, like, I'm ideologically opposed to a lot of these people. I hate a lot of the thought leaders on the far left. But, like, politically, it's so different. Nobody is out here shooting up schools with a I'm riding with Biden sticker on their backpack. But Trump, like, is almost indecipherable from a lunatic MAGA conspiracy theorist. Like, unironically, no?
That can be on for the discussion, but I'd say, like, when it comes to the spring of 2024, we have seen several Democratic lawmakers go into those protests to actually support mainly the squad, which is Ilhan Omar and Alexander Cortez,
mm-hmm.
and so support for that movement, and it was shown that in several of those instances they were blocking specifically Jewish students from entering campus or sections of campus and making them feel very unsafe.
Yeah, but like AOC, first of all, so you're pointing to the two furthest left-leaning people, right, in the Democrat Congress. But then also, too, they've had to answer for that. Like, people ask them questions, and they've had to disavow that, right? Oh, no, we shouldn't be blocking Jewish students from going to school. We shouldn't be violent in any of our protests. And a lot of the far-left protesters fucking hate AOC because they feel like she's been too moderate on these things. Like, meanwhile, Donald Trump is like directly and literally, like, can you think of a single equivalent statement to after Erica had her performance at the WWF Charlie Kirk Memorial or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. When Trump comes on and he says, Charlie Kirk says that he wanted to forgive his enemies, and I want people to know I hate my political enemies. Like, what's an equivalent Democratic statement to that from leadership, from lawmakers? Like, there's nothing.
Okay.
In terms of, like, spreading conspiratorial stuff about, like, most... I don't know if it's... No, maybe Ryan knows. I don't know. I don't know if a single cabinet member, maybe Rubio did, acknowledged that Biden won the 2020 election. I think they were almost all asked this question, and all of them refused to answer.
They'll say he's president, but they won't say exactly. He won a free and fair election.
Yes, yeah. They'll say... Yeah, they say that. That's a dog whistle, right? Oh, well, Biden's the president. So what is the equivalent to that on the left, right? That's crazy to me.
Well, actually, I have to say, like, during most of the Trump's first term, many on Democrat lawmakers or... for example, Clinton, ever since the 2016 election to 2020, has always said that Trump was an illegitimate president.
So I think she said one time there is a larger thing she was talking about. But when she was talking about, like, illegitimate president, it was in the context of, like, the way that his conduct is, right? I don't think she was saying, like, nobody – like, they try to make this claim that people said the election was rigged or whatever. And there might have been some fringe voices that said that. But again, like, we can find quotes, but, like, look at the behavior. Hillary conceded the election the day of. So did Kamala Harris, right? In 2020, Pence had to walk out on stage and say, we're going to wait till all the votes are counted because Trump tried to declare himself the winner. And today, they still refuse to even acknowledge the outcome of that election, which is insane to me. And I think is indicative of potential bad behavior in future elections. Like, that's really bad. That's really scary, right?
Yeah, I definitely say, like, it's definitely...
Hold on, wait. Okay, because this is a fascinating reaction to me. You're, like, hesitant. Like, in my opinion, I would exile if I was the dictator for a day.
No.
These people would be exiled from the country permanently, would never be allowed back.
No,
but I'm asking, like, how is it, in your mind, how is it, like, yeah, you know...
No.
They tried to coup the government in 2020, and yeah, you know, they don't accept the results of the election, even though they lost every single court case.
Okay.
And that's kind of bad. Isn't that, like, crazy?
Yeah, I definitely agree that... There's definitely, after all the court cases were dealt with, Trump should have been definitely more, like, I'd say less hostile.
Okay,
definitely,
sorry.
Definitely less hostile in his rhetoric.
I understand what you're saying. I'm going to even disagree with you. It shouldn't have been after. None of those court cases should have started. Because almost all the court cases were started on bullshit fabricated evidence anyway. Remember Sidney Powell's Kraken? Nothing came from any of that. We saw the outcome of the defamation suit that Dominion filed against Fox News. They were all lying about the Dominion shit. They knew they were lying about it. And they were spreading lies at the behest of Sidney Powell and Giuliani at the Trump campaign. So, like, the lawsuits, really, a lot of them shouldn't have even started because they knew they were built on bullshit. We saw that. How many times do we see videos in the Was it Georgia? Of the ballots under the boxes where they were pretending that those ballot boxes showed up out of nowhere. You can watch the full videos. They were just put under and then they were taken back out to count. So even the lawsuits were starting on a bullshit foundation. This is not good.
Yeah.
They refuse to acknowledge any of this. Wait, let me one more thing. Yeah. Sorry.
So I guess like.
All right. So one question I'll ask, and then you can respond and ask, and then say
of course.
What is like any equivalent behavior on the Democratic lawmaker side, on like a Democratic elected leader side, not somebody that Republicans want us to look at, like crazies on Twitter, but like what's an actual like large Democrat that what's the equivalent action?
I'm definitely going to say, I'll relook at that, but I definitely say it's definitely not my strong suit, but the main reason I came up here was definitely said, especially when he said that more violence on the right wing side than the left wing side, but I experienced more, like, I won't say violence, but definitely a lot more hatred from people who are on the left, especially when the whole pro-Palestinian stuff started. And I know it means, and I don't mean the general left, the general right, because I think most part of those people are mostly civil, as a more on the far right and far left.
But I mean that's because they're status quo warriors. Is that really surprising? Like if I put a bunch of pro-Israel people and a bunch of pro-Palestinian people together, what do the pro-Israel people have to be mad about? Israel's gotten everything it's wanted over the past, well, 80 years, but like over the past like few years especially, right? Like if you're an Israeli, you know, simp, what do you have to be mad about? You've literally gotten the fucking world handed to you. Mm-hmm. It would make sense to me that pro-Palestinians would be super mad in that situation. And in a scenario where you have 100 Israeli supporters and 100 Palestinian supporters in the same room, I would expect the Palestinians to be more mad. Does that necessarily make them more violent? I mean, I guess maybe. Like statistically, there's going to be more violence, but the status quo massively supports the Israelis, so the Israeli supporters. So like, wouldn't you expect that?
I would expect more civil debate because one major thing, again, as I alluded to initially, was that of the murder of, like, you go outside the conflict zone itself, the more the violence that can, like, happen in the West between, like, Israel and Israel-Palestinian conflict has been initiated by the pro-Palestinian and sadly turned more deadly.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. But again, I would also, like, kind of expect that. Because why would any pro-Israeli initiate any violence at all? They were getting everything they want, right?
if you say that as a pro-Israeli, I don't feel like as like policy-wise you can say that. But when it comes to like having seen DC, especially on like not only online but with people that I used to be friends with, be very I won't say like violent, but very like I would say like more supportive of. What happened on October 7th, then...
Sure. And so, I can agree that that's bad. I'm sorry. Okay, I know you're trying to kick him off. Hold on. This is my issue, okay? I bet you can even catch me saying something like this because I've been so mind-fucked by the Republican media machine in this country, right? Is it feels like left-wing people are more violent because a lot of them seem to support pro-Palestinian violence or, like, October 7th or whatever versus right-wing people that don't support stuff like that. Like, maybe I can... Okay, like, I might have even said statements like this in the past. But, like, so much right-wing violence is, like, seen as acceptable or normal. Like... Why is Donald Trump deploying the military against his own cities? But like when Republicans support that, they're not seen as violent for being supportive of that. But in my mind, that's fucking crazy. And there's just like not much care that seems to be paid to that because Republicans just don't pay much attention to it. Okay. Or like, you know, we look at like you've brought up legitimate instances of like crazy pro-Pali people committing violence in the United States. But like we have, you know, like mass ICE dudes that are fucking terrorizing, you know, parts of the United States right now. But that's like seen as like acceptable or normal. And I don't know how Republicans control the narrative so much when you see Christy Noem walking on a building and looking down at like a guy in a fucking frog suit saying that, you know, the Portland Antifa super soldiers are here to take over. I would encourage people to pay attention more to like right-wing violence is like so kind of like status quo-y and normalized. And because they don't have to do anything, like if I'm a right-wing dude, fucking ICE is beating the shit out of brown people and the military is going everywhere and doing what, standing around and wasting taxpayer money, I guess. Like I don't have to protest. I don't have to be violent. They're doing it for me. And then there was any left-wing violence in response. Not that I encourage or support any left-wing violence, especially because I disagree with most of the people on the far left that are violent. But like... Damn, it sucks for them to say, like, man, we're so violent and the right is never violent, I guess, even though the right has, like, the establishment violence right now, you know?
Okay. Hopefully I'll let other people speak, but I guess we can agree to disagree on some issues that weren't discussed today.
Yep. Okay, thanks. I appreciate it.
I had a question. What do you think is the biggest issue with the Trump administration? Like, what's your biggest fear?
The biggest issue with the Trump admin, I mean, I would say it's his, like, disregard for rule of law. I think that there are certain systems that when you start to disregard these systems, like everything else kind of doesn't matter, right? So like arguably like freedom of speech, like if you get rid of freedom of speech, you kind of don't have any other right because now your ability to speak on any other right is compromised. So yeah, when Donald Trump seems to not care what the actual written law is and it gives him the ability to do anything, I think that that's a really scary world to be in.
Okay. Now the reason I asked that, it's going to sound strange. I was the one that authored the essay, Has Woke Gone Too Far?
Okay.
And in there we talked about, executive or unitary executive theory, Trump packing the courts, getting the lame duck presidency with Obama, deploying troops to the cities. How do a Democrat stop that? Because obviously we've known about that for like 8-10 years now. Nobody did anything, and everything they put in Project 2025 has come to fruition with no backing.
How do Democrats stop that? The thing that I've said, and I don't know what this would look like, and it doesn't fucking matter because I was going to do it anyway, but at the end of this administration, ideally when a Democratic administration comes in, I personally think there needs to be like a truth and reconciliation commission. Like there needs to be a reckoning or an accountability project for what's happened, because we can't just like step into the next admin and pretend that nothing here happened the way that it did. Like I think that the Conservative Party has lost like the moral high ground on literally every single topic they could ever pretend to care about. You know, you can't be the party of free speech and deport people because they're pro-Palestine. You can't be the party who is, you know, like pro-rule of law while Trump is literally personally ordering around his DOJ to go and prosecute political enemies. You can't be the party of anti-corruption and you hate Hunter Biden while Trump is literally cutting deals with his family on behalf of his son and with his crypto coin scams. Like they've lost the moral high ground on every single issue. And we can't just like moonwalk into 2028 pretending that nothing ever happened like this. I don't know what exactly that process looks like, but there has to be some kind of process in line for that.
Okay. And then kind of
going
into that reconciliation idea, constitutional convention, bad idea, good idea?
I think it's a bad idea. So I thought about this a lot, the idea that like we need to change the laws or change the Constitution. But the reality is that like he's breaking the laws and they don't care about the Constitution. I think that it's a mistake to try to make a perfect system that will capture every bad actor. Nobody designed, like if you and I were to sit down and play chess, right? I don't know the formal written rules of chess, but I guess I do, but like I don't know if there's a rule book, but I'm guessing in the rule book there's not a rule against me like stabbing you, right? So like if I were to start bringing knives to chess games to kill my opponents, nobody's going to say, okay, we know this team is going to do this. How about in the next tournament we make it illegal to stab your opponent in chess, right? Well, this is a person who's not playing the game in good faith, obviously, right? So when you look at like the Trump administration, you look at the way they're acting, how many times, you know, did we hear Vance throw that stupid Andrew Jackson quote around of like, well, if the courts have made their rulings, let them enforce it? Or how many times have we heard them say things that are just completely with disregard? Like, I don't know if I've heard yet a Solicitor General argue with the merits of any fucking case in front of the Supreme Court. You know, these same people who hate process and procedure wrap themselves in it when they have to defend the merits or substance of any fucking thing that they argue. So like I feel like this is not an administration of placing a faith. There is no rule, there is no constraining force that's written down somewhere that would restrict these people. It has to come in the form of like accountability or consequences. Like there needs to be some demonstration to the American people that like, hey, if you act this way, like you're not going to get away with it. This can't be this way. It can't be like that,
right? And the reason I was asking is because Roe v. Wade, we had it in case law. It wasn't enshrined in the Constitution or in any amendments, and it got overturned. Being proactive like that would have prevented January 6th as well. They used judges of elections within the article to describe how they were going to be able to actually have Mike Pence overturn the election. Those are things that Democrats knew about. They could have enshrined.
For Roe, I agree having a law for that maybe would have helped a little bit more. For January 6th, they were trying to break the law. They knew they were breaking the law. Anytime a Republican says this is constitutional, that's code word for we're saying it's constitutional because we want to break. The Electoral Count Act is what they were trying to break. But yeah, go ahead.
Getting to that idea of them kind of pushing the boundaries.
Shattering the boundaries. Yeah, go ahead.
To say it lightly, yeah, I guess. We obviously have term limits. But we have had presidents who had 3 terms. Obviously, that amendment got put into the Constitution or whatever. Technically, Trump could get a 3rd term if he was elected House Speaker, Republicans won the presidency, and both Vice President and President abdicated. And we have no prevention of that because he wasn't technically elected to office. He was appointed because through the succession line. Democrats really have a lot to go against at this point, and I'm just curious, because you have one of the biggest voices, what kind of policy do you think could prevent this? Because
I understand what you're saying. I don't think there is one. Like, I don't know if you have a legal background at all, or...
that there's like that argument is so dumb that he could be appointed or whatever. But that's because, like, if you understand it's just the 22nd Amendment was the one for term limits. Like, the understanding is that, like, you can't do that, what you just said.
But you also can't put fake electors in, and that happened. Nobody got prosecuted.
True. And I would say even more strongly that on the 14th Amendment, they made a similar argument for, like, no person shall, you know, be like, or whatever. And it's like, and they're saying, well, that, you know, they weren't saying it's illegal to or whatever.
Of insurrection. Yeah, so it was, but
the way that they read the language was really stupid on that. And the same arguments that they made for striking Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, I think they could use to strike that section of the 22nd Amendment. But going back to what I said before, there is no rule that you could make to restrain, like, a bad faith actor.
So we just have to take it as it comes in, huh?
You have to have people that are willing to play within the rules of the system, right? When Obama wanted to, I think it was for the drone strike of the American citizen overseas, when Obama wanted to do that, Obama's approach wasn't, I'm going to fucking do whatever I can because I'm the president. He went to the Office of Legal Counsel and he sought their legal advice. He's like, do you think this is something that the president is legally capable of doing? And when a person is acting that way, like, you can tell that, you know, he's at least acting like he feels like he has some kind of constraints. Meanwhile, Donald Trump has gotten rid of criminal immunity or gotten rid of criminal liability for the presidency. That's just crazy to me.
Stack the court, so there was no preventative measures. We knew that they were going to try and get the lame duck presidency excuse.
I'm saying his
immunity, and it just continues and continues, and it for makes the criminal, Democrats and leftists look helpless, and their constituency is left out to dry.
Yeah, I agree. There just has to be some kind of accounting for what they're doing. But for the criminal immunity thing, there's nothing we could have done to prevent that, right? Nobody would even think to pass a law that's saying the president can't do crimes, because obviously the fucking president can't commit crimes. What a stupid thing to think. But then the Supreme Court comes out and says, well, actually, maybe he can do as many crimes as long as he's the president. So how would you even write a rule against that, you know? And I feel like there are just an infinite number of circumstances. There needs to be an accounting for from the top down, politically, on our media level, on our every part, where Republicans just can't feel like they can come in and act like soulless demons and get away with it every single time. I just think that's crazy.
This is my proposed solution.
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm curious.
To be proactive, you know, yes. We have these outlines from Project 2025. We have history of the Republican Party and how they operate. A simple solution is, instead of focusing on rhetoric, you know, I kind of like what Gavin Newsom's been doing, trolling Trump on Twitter, but that's not governing. So if they came up with actual policies to prevent this, it would give people a reason to vote for them instead of just saying, oh, they're the antithesis to what the Republicans are trying to push.
Yeah, I wish I could agree with you, but I feel like American citizens don't give a fuck about policy. They like the trolling. That's all they see. That's all they care about. That's all they think about. Like nobody cared to hear about Project 2025. It's the only reason I didn't, you know, like, talk about it as much on my stream, is because it seemed like it was kind of boring to people. They wanted to hear about, like, inflation and the economy and how epic and
like you said, top-down responsibility. If you have a platform, if you understand the material, you have that duty to do.
True, but we also need our elected officials to push on it, but we need our media to push on it too. I hear this thing said so much. It's so funny, by like left-wing media or by far leftists even. They'll say things like, the Democratic Party messaging is so bad. The Democratic Party messaging is so bad. They don't say that on Fox News, because they do messaging for the Republicans. They wouldn't say Trump is so bad at messaging on this. They just help Trump message on it.
But that's authoritarianism at its finest.
Sure. And I'm not saying on the left we have to be like as crazy, but I'm just saying that, like,
prisoner's
on the right.
Dilemma. Prisoner's dilemma. I think it would be a viable tactic.
Sure. Wait, why are you saying that?
I mean, it kind of worked with Gavin Newsom. Obviously, to be honest, I don't actually support him. He kind of lost my support. I am technically a never Trump Republican.
Sure. Okay, I only ask because I've been talking about prisoner's dilemma a lot on my stream.
Yeah, I watch your content. Yeah,
oh, okay, okay, yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. But, like, there has to be, yeah. Like, it can't be that, like, every time somebody on the left says something, they're getting, you know, fucking railed from every single conservative and everybody on the left and everybody on the far left. And, it, like, it's like, yeah, there has to be some kind of, like, unified messaging, yeah.
Cool, okay, appreciate it.
Thank you, I appreciate it.